We read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the 8th chapter, text number 7, Hare Krishna. Tasmat savesu kalesu mam manusmaryujacha mayarpita mano buddhir mame vaisyasya sansaya. Quite good. Tasmat, therefore, sarvesu, at all, kaleshu, times, mam, me, anusmara, go on remembering, yuja, fight, cha, also, mai, unto me, arpita, surrendering, manaha, mind, buddhi, intellect, mam, unto me, eva, surely, isyasi, you will attain, asansaya, beyond a doubt. Translation. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Purport. This instruction to Arjuna is very important for all men engaged in material activities. The Lord does not say that one should give up his prescribed duties or engagements. One can continue them and at the same time think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. This will free one from material contamination and engage the mind and intelligence in Krishna. By chanting Krishna's name, one will be transferred to the supreme planet, Krishna Loka, without a doubt. We see the description of the devotees of the Lord who are very active, who are for example, Hanuman is depicted as carrying the mountain for Lakshman, who had been shot and who was unconscious by some terrible astra, and only this particular herb called Mrityusajivani could revive him from practically near death, from this coma-like state he was in. So Hanuman was a devotee who was active in serving the Lord, and in this way, he was depicting the mood of a devotee. In the same way, Arjuna was fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and here he is recommended by Lord Krishna to continue to act according to his nature. So one must engage the talents that were given to him by the Supreme Lord in the service of the Lord, not that we deny our individuality. This is not a process of negation or a process of giving up one's activity and work in the world. Rather, bhakti yoga is very natural. It means purified activity. It means to eternally engage in the service of the Lord with whatever talents and one has according to his particular nature. So therefore, devotional service is very practical, and it is not at all required to do anything beyond that. We find that there are Navalakshanam, or 9 qualities of devotional service. First of all, the process of Sravanam, or Maharaj Pariksit is the devotee who attained perfection in that process. then the process of Kirtanam, and it was Sukadeva Goswami who attained perfection in that process by perfectly speaking the transcendental topics about the Supreme Lord. And Sukadeva was specially empowered for this purpose. And although other devotees that were in one sense senior to Sukadeva Goswami were also present, such as Sanatan such as Vyasadeva, such as Narada Muni. These great personalities were the Param Guru, or the grand spiritual master, and the direct spiritual master of Sukadeva Goswami. So even in the presence of his spiritual master and the spiritual master of his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami was meant to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, because he was specifically empowered for the purpose of speaking the Bhagavatam in a very attractive way. Whereas Vyasadeva's particular mission was to write the Vedic literatures. And whereas Narada Muni's particular mission was to distribute bhakti everywhere, devotional service to the Supreme Lord, all throughout the universe. So each particular devotee had his own service and was performing it accordingly. So Sukadeva Goswami particularly was meant for this process of Kirtanam. And like that, all the various processes of devotional service were being performed by various devotees. If we look at the six Goswamis, then we also see that the six Goswamis were all pure devotees of the Supreme Lord, and they were all fully dedicated to the service of the Lord. Still, they each served the Lord in different ways. We see that Gopal Bhatta Goswami was known for reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. The way he was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam was very attractive, and he could recite the Bhagavatam in various meters, and he had different ways of chanting all the verses. And it was very attractive. Whereas Sanatan Goswami was very, very wise and was known for his wisdom by every single resident of Vrindavan. And he was counseling so many people who used to come all day to ask advice on different subject matters. And we know that he was also daily circumambulating Govardhan Hill. We see that Raghunath Das Goswami was known for his great renunciation. He came from a very, very wealthy family, but he gave up all that wealth, and he gave up any form of material comfort. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see descriptions of how Raghunath Das Goswami was begging alms at the Simhadwara, at the gate in Jagannath Puri of the Jagannath Temple. And after some time, he was thinking, no, this is not good, because in this way, I'm calculating. I'm looking at different people and thinking, will this one give? Will that one give? This one gave me yesterday, probably will give me again today. And he said, in this way, my mind will just be thinking like this and be distracted from remembrance of Krishna. So this renunciation is useless renunciation, because the very purpose of my renunciation must be to free myself completely from thoughts of anything but Krishna. Everybody thought, no, I will stop this. And there were also booths where they used to hand out prasadam from different places. Some charity activity was going on where the sadhus were being fed. So he thought, let me just go there once a day, because that's easy. I'll just go there, take the food, eat it, and then after that I don't have to think about it anymore. So therefore he thought, I'll do that. But soon after that, he did not go to those places anymore either. And he took simply the rejected rice that was thrown out from the temple, that was like rotten. And he took that rice and washed it under water, so that the soft parts would go and that the hard core would remain. And that was his prasadam. Right? When Lord Chaitanya heard, Lord Chaitanya came. And Lord Chaitanya, he said, Raghunath, what are you eating these days? Right? What kind of prasadam are you having these days? And Raghunath, he felt it coming and said, no, 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 my lord. No, 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 no. This is not very, very, very nice at all. No, no, no. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what is it? What is it? And by force, he just snatched some of that prasadam and he took it and said, ah, this is the greatest nectar I've ever tasted. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami. Then Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was paying obeisances so many times a day. So many times a day he was paying his obeisances. To all the Vaishnavas he was paying his obeisances. And he could not hear any criticism of any Vaishnava. It was not possible. As soon as you started, he was, hey, where did he go? And he was walking down the road. He was no longer visible to anyone. Such are the qualities of the Vaishnavas. So the Vaishnavas all have very wonderful qualities, and they all share in the same qualities, because no advanced Vaishnava would engage in Vaishnav Ninda or in criticizing a Vaishnava, knowing well the nature of Vaishnava Aparad. But beyond even that, the mood of avoiding Vaishnava Aparad, knowing well the glories of the Vaishnavas. But yet, each Vaishnava seemed to have his particular preference. Every Vaishnava relishes the Bhagavatam, but yet Gopal Bhatta Goswami displayed that feature. Every Vaishnava is full of realization and therefore has become the person Bhagavat. And it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Therefore, a Vaishnava has the answer to all questions. So it was not surprising that Sanatana Goswami could answer all questions perfectly. Just as Srila Prabhupada could answer all questions perfectly. Just as the Srila Prabhupada somehow or other gave an answer that was perfect in the spiritual sense. That always was the perfect spiritual answer under all circumstances. Not necessarily that the Vaishnava, simply because he's a Vaishnava, will know all the intricacies of computers or other technicalities, right? And not that you can ask him any question on those subject matters, although he knows the essence of computers, obviously. Right? And if you ask him a question about computers, he'll give you a perfect answer. Whatever that may be, I will leave it for what it is now. But the point is that ultimately everything that a Vaishnava does is perfect, but we see that he maintains his personal nature. Therefore, it is difficult to understand who is a Vaishnava. Because one may think, well, a Vaishnava, that is not so difficult. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kitaniya sadari. He must be very humble. That is easy to see. So I'm just simply looking for that person whose hands are always folded, who is always bowing his head at everyone, and who is the most humble, who says, I am completely not qualified, no, who refuses any honor, who refuses any attention, and who does the most humble service. He is the topmost Vaishnava. It seems easy. Amongst Vaishnavas, the most, he who takes the most humble position. But it's not so easy, because true humility is not so easily understood. And as one Vaishnava displays that particular quality of always taking the humble position, the other Vaishnava may take the position to roar like a lion and utilize a powerful voice and penetrating eyes to pierce the heart of the conditioned souls and to cut down the pride of those who are falsely puffed up. So it is so difficult to understand who is a Vaishnava. One can only try to become a Vaishnava himself, and Krishna will guide from within, and the spiritual master will guide from without. The spiritual master offers the instructions from the parampara, as he has received them from his own spiritual master, applied them, and therefore realized them within his heart. He is constantly absorbed in these instructions of his spiritual master and therefore passes them on to his disciple. And in that way, the spiritual master leaves us with many instructions. But then again, it is not so easy. Once Srila Bhakti Siddhanta made a statement, said, I do not have any disciples, because who is following my instructions? Yes. So we understand, I don't know when he made this statement, but I heard he made this statement. So the point is well taken, that in order to be the disciple, one must really take these instructions and carry them on his head, take the instructions of the spiritual masters like great jewels, like great treasures, like very, very valuable. Something that one practically worships, just as we are worshipping the Shilas of the Lord, we worship the instructions. The instructions of the spiritual master are worshipable, but as everything, you know, after a while, it loses its freshness, and they begin to accumulate dust. They begin to accumulate dust, and the original glory is no longer manifest. And at that point, we become dry. So this happens all the time. So one must, in the beginning stages of following the instructions of a spiritual master, constantly dust the diamonds. Constantly one must dust the diamonds, because again and again one notices that dust is accumulating again and again. So this dusting of the diamonds is the constant endeavor to renew one's commitment to the instructions of the spiritual master. Just the promise to chant 16 rounds alone is a great challenge and a great task. So one person may be very focused on this aspect of devotional service, and he may become like the personification of Guru Das, right? He's Guru Das personified. He's always speaking about the glories of his spiritual master, always absorbed in trying to serve his spiritual master. That is his meditation, right? Another person may be absorbed in the mission. Right? He may be absorbed in how can I spread this Krishna consciousness. And he's always eager to knock on every door, to go everywhere, and to somehow or other introduce people to Krishna consciousness, guide people in Krishna consciousness, always associate with people on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Such a person is also automatically pleasing his spiritual master. Although his meditation is not like, how am I pleasing my spiritual master? My spiritual master, my spiritual master. He naturally thinks of his spiritual master. But also he's thinking, how am I going to preach? How am I going to deliver these conditioned souls? And his mind ticks over in this way. So both of the disciples are fully dedicated to the spiritual master. But yet the meditation is slightly different. So in this way, there are so many types of meditation. And there is and these kinds of meditation are meant to be varied and individual. And in due course of time, they naturally begin to manifest. We see one person, he just gets so absorbed in scriptures, he learns so many verses, right? And he spends hours and hours in going deep into the scriptures, learning the verses and learning the purports and the contexts in which they come. He takes the verse, he knows each word, can present it on the basis of the meaning of each word. Subsequently, he knows in what context they were spoken in the Shastra. Sometimes he knows strings of verses where in the logic of a particular philosophical point is described. And in this way, he establishes tattva. And his contribution is to deliver the conclusions of the scripture. Again, another one is simply very devotional in mood. Right? Such a person is very soft-hearted and is doing everything with great attention and devotion. And his devotion is very inspiring in that way to others. It seems to be contagious. It is, when you're around such a person, you also start feeling like, yes, that you see him pay obeisances, and he's really paying obeisances, like, you know, not just going down, but you can see as he's paying his obeisances, he's like doing it with so much care and devotion. Right? So again, a different mood. Another person may show great efficiency, right? Maybe super efficient for Krishna. Right? May just always be thinking, how can I just, whatever I do for Krishna, do in the nicest, in the best way. Right? His accounts are always 100% right. They always match properly. Everything is always done. Everything is always in order. Things are immediately written down. And in this way, he does so much work for Krishna. So all these qualities that we see in different individuals are quite different and sometimes almost contradictory, like the chastising Vaishnava and the one begging everyone for mercy. But yet, all these devotees are making their contribution to this movement. And the movement of the Supreme Lord, either in the material world or existing in the spiritual world, is consisting of such different types of devotees. We're seeing in the spiritual world also, we see, on the one hand, we see Jagadananda Pandit, right, who is none other than in the mood of Satyabhama, and always angry with Krishna, chastising Krishna, not satisfied with Krishna, wanting more from Krishna, same Jagadananda, wanting more from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wanting to offer so many things the Lord didn't want to accept, a bed, some scented oil. And when he brought the scented oil, then the Lord could not accept it. He was a sannyasi. He said, what will I do with this scented oil? I cannot use that, you know. And Jagadananda was so angry. Lord Chaitanya did not say directly. He sent a message to Govinda, his personal servant. And then Jagadananda went to the courthouse of the house where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed and just took those vessels of oil in clay pots and threw them on the ground. Smash! Big noise, big mess. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inquired what had happened. What did he do? Why did he throw the oil like that? And Jagadananda simply said, oil? What oil? There was no oil. Right? And left like that. So many personalities. Right? So we must engage that personality in the service of Krishna. And it will manifest. One can sing very nicely. Another one can only produce sound like a frog. What can be done? Right? We all chant, but still, the one who will sing sweet bhajan. So, in this way, each devotee has a good quality, has an opulence. And we are all looking for that opulence. And that is what we see in each devotee. We see his particularly, his outstanding quality in devotional service. One devotee's qualification is great determination. He's so determined that, like, under nothing happens, and he's still, you know, whatever may happen, he's still going strong, right? So determined. So in this way, different devotees will naturally be the source of inspiration in different situations. Naturally, the one who is so determined at times of difficulties will stand out. Whereas the one who sings so sweet on an evening when we are together having bhajans, he will sing. And like that, there is a special inspiration to take everywhere. So inspiration comes from all the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnavas combined. And that is actually the wonderful experience of devotional service. How different devotees serve Krishna in different moods and different ways, and how they complement each other. How we depend upon the devotees. Because there where we are weak, someone else is strong. And where others are weak, we may feel, well, this is easy. I think I can do this. Yeah? It is amazing how what is so difficult for one person can be so easy for another, and the other way around. You know, some people, they feel like distributing books is nice and easy, and others feel it's like, oh, it's so heavy. And again, other services, you know, like some people feel that being a pujari is like so natural, whereas others feel like, you know, anything but being a pujari, right? That's very difficult for me. I would find it very hard to be a pujari. So, naturally everyone gravitates to his nature. And therefore, in due course of time, as he matures in devotional service, his service begins to mature according to that nature. And while his service is maturing in that particular nature, it becomes like a very, very great ornament. Because gradually he takes on the qualities that are going along with that service. Just as we see, pujaris who have been pujaris for 25 years, they become very, very pure and very, very, their whole life centers around the deity. And we see that book distributors in the same way that have been book distributors for so long become like that absorbed. Or temple presidents that have been like there for a long time become very mature. Therefore, generally speaking, it is very nice if we can become absorbed in a service and stick to it. Always changing service is sometimes not good. Of course, it may be someone's particular nature to be a jack of all trades and to always change services, and in this way, after 25 years of always changing services, he's really an all-rounder, right? So that can also be an opulence. But it is very nice to see how different devotees flourish in these ways. And in this way, they become like the surrender that they have had in their particular service begins to manifest, and they become effulgent in that area of service. They become outstanding in that area of service because just they do it. And all their energy and contribution in that field becomes like they can offer great, wonderful realizations and experience and so forth. So this is how devotional service is appreciated. Therefore, experience in devotional service is very valuable. It is very valuable. It is what we are looking for. We are looking for the mature, experienced devotees to associate with, because they have this great opulence of so much realization in their particular way that they serve the Lord. And in that way, we ourselves also can learn from their realization. We can learn from the way they went that path. And it can help us to combine and to expand our own realizations. So in this way, Vaishnavas take advantage of each other's association, of each other's realizations, because each has been serving in his own particular way. And in this way they complement each other, and by such association one is greatly benedicted, because one's understanding of spiritual life deepens and broadens and expands in all directions. So this is the nectar of Vaishnava association. And in this way one can gradually understand different features of Krishna. Because Krishna also has all these features. Soft like a rose, hard like a thunderbolt. This way. So like that, Lord Krishna is also manifesting all different moods. What is it? Right here, huh? Not a flying saucer. All right. So I'll end if there's any questions, and I'll try and answer.
Sometimes Bhakti Vedanta seems to know or able to find the quality which is in them. And what happens also is that they tend to see others and think, if only I could be that. And so they try that, and that doesn't work. So then they see another devotee and think it's an nice quality, and they try to have that. Often it doesn't work.
Well, it's devotional. Spiritual life is not that we join the temple and then you get the menu card, you know. And there's the menu card and all the types of devotional service are on there. And you think, well, you know, let me begin with a little bit of soup, you know, like something light. A little cleaning service. And now let me add the main dish of the day. Some responsibility in devotional service. Then let me add a little sweet also, right? Some special service for the deities. And now I got a perfect meal here in my spiritual life, right? And I'm selecting like that. And then you select this and that. Well, that opportunity may be there sometimes. But generally speaking, the first service is the given service. The first service that we are doing, our primary service is given to us. We're just simply asked if we can do something. Right? Of course, along the lines, different desires begin to develop. Right? As you're doing things, some desire begins to develop in your heart. You get these. So gradually, you may gravitate towards that desire. But initially, you just simply take the service that is given. And if no desire develops in your heart, just keep on doing the service that is given and that is asked from you. Right? In due course of time, some desire will come. And then it will become very clear what to do, what you want to do. Right? And otherwise, simply satisfy the Vaishnavas. And as they desire, you will do. Right? That is very nice. And anyhow, even if you develop a personal desire, you must still take the blessings of the Vaishnavas. You cannot just run after your own desires. But you must take the blessings of the Vaishnavas for executing that desire. And one must see that the desire is actually inspired by Krishna. Therefore, the first and foremost authority is the spiritual master. But he may not always get involved in all the nitty-gritty of one's everyday spiritual life. And the instructions may be more general. So then there are immediate authorities and immediate senior Vaishnavas present who one can consult and who will naturally tell one what service to do and what service is favorable. But still some desires manifest. Everyone develops some desire to do some particular service sometimes, naturally. You may watch the deity worship and think, yes, I also feel like doing that sometimes. Like I've been watching people do Govardhan Shila worship, right? Now I've developed this desire to do it also, but a little different, right? It's my own desire, but for a long time I've been wanting to go to Govardhan, take a huge rock of Govardhan and paint his big face on it and put a very big turban on it and then, do just a one-time puja. Maybe I'll do it this year. Who knows? Been thinking about it for years, actually. Never did it. I don't know what kind of desire that is, but still, I want to do it. So like that, we see how the Vaishnavas may develop some desire like that. We saw how Madhu Pandit Goswami, the original, was wearing a coat and a hat, right? A hat made of tulsi beads and a coat made of tulsi beads, right? That's pretty far out, right? Pretty. And he was doing this during his puja time. He had a whole jacket, made of tulsi beads, very fine tulsi beads, and a hat made of tulsi beads. And he was wearing this during his puja. So we see how different desires can develop in various ways, and we see how the previous acharyas were going so deep in their devotional service that they were just becoming oblivious to externals, and just he had this intimate relationship with Tulsi, and therefore he dressed himself in Tulsi. So gradually these things will manifest. You cannot imitate that. But, in due course of time, we become more and more individual in our devotional service. That is natural, according to our natures. So if you can't figure it out in the beginning, just do the service you're asked to. Any other? Yes. If the authorities allow that, then it's all right. If that is sanctioned by the authorities, then it is fine. It just has to be sanctioned, that is all. And one cannot just say, my quality, my desire, my nature has to come first. And no, first is the desire of the spiritual master and of the Vaishnavas in general. Right? So one pleases them and thus one tries to oblige the Vaishnavas, but ultimately if the Vaishnavas give the blessings, then it's very nice. Because naturally naturally you desire to work according to your ability. So if you're good at something and you can do it very nice, you can make a very nice offering to Krishna. So why would we make you do something that you're terrible at? Yeah. Obviously, the one who cooks well goes in the kitchen, and the one who is always in time and punctual can do the deity worship, whereas one who's always late and spaced out and messy and sloppy, and who cannot even dress himself like me, will never be allowed to do deity worship. I was terrible. I've the only time I've been a pujari a little bit was here, for 3 months, but I used to fall asleep in the last arati, I confess. And throughout my whole spiritual life, the only time I ever dressed deities was when there was absolutely nobody else, when the pujari had either a heart attack or, something, an accident, and then there was no one else, and then I did it. And it was terrible every time. So I've given up. For now, in this life, I guess. I'm afraid I'm not cut out for that. So what to do? Different people are cut out for different things. Right? And so in due course of time, it's natural that you drift towards those things that come natural, that you're good at. In the beginning, everyone distributes books, right? But then in due course of time, some people continue, some go in other direction, Naturally, the ones who distribute lots of books, they continue, generally speaking, right? And the guys who used to distribute 3 books a day, right? They give up after some time. They go and try something else, Maybe they get into a computer, I don't know what they'll do. But it's natural that they look for something else. So propensities are there and are recognized and are not meant to be ignored. But it says that even if one is deprived of one's occupation, that still he should keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. Actually, the verse has a few other things. It says, if one is spat upon, beaten, urinated upon, or mistreated, or deprived of one's occupation, still one should keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. So that comes first. So even whatever you do, Krishna's mercy, do it as good as I can. And that is our movement, right? And somehow or other, yoga kshema vahami aham, that Krishna empowers his devotees. And we have noticed it. Can you cook the breakfast today? Well, I can't cook. That's all right, you know, just cook the breakfast. But, well, I'll show you, you know. Here's the sabji. Yes, yes. Oh, yes, yes. You just cut it up. See, like this. Yeah, there are the spices. Don't put too much. And, okay, here's the stove. Oh, thanks. Okay, it's got to be ready by this time. There you go, right? You're the cook, you know. 1 week later, you're in charge of the kitchen, right? You're the head of the kitchen. Things have developed like that in our movement. And yoga kshema vahami aham. You become empowered by Krishna. He will give us the strength by which we can do it. He'll make up for our shortfalls. So what can we say? If the desire is to please Krishna, you can even do things for which you have absolutely no doubt. Right? So who knows what hidden abilities Krishna will manifest in us in the future. Yes?
In Western Bhagavad Gita, Swami is speaking about there was present spiritual
two generations of spiritual masters.
Did you get some instruction by that?
Well, I mean, Sukadev Goswami, Narada Muni, and Vyasadev were all three on one line in that regards. Although in the disciplic succession, they were in three different positions, right, as Param Guru, Guru, and Disciple, they were all Mahabhagavats, obviously. They were all on the topmost platform of pure devotional service, therefore directly in contact with Krishna. So they were completely steered and inspired by Krishna. Therefore, Sukadev Goswami, as soon as he came out of the womb, his direction was clear. He was completely directed by the Supreme Lord and just went to the Ganges, where Maharaj Pariksit was waiting. It wasn't that he had to be told, you know, and then you go left, and then after the third hill, there's a turn off, you know, and don't miss that, because otherwise you get terribly lost, right? And so forth, you know, and that he was like trying to figure out the map and all these problems, right? Finally, you know, after lots of trouble, he reached Pariksit Maharaj. No, he was just directed there by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Vyasadeva was equally in contact with the Supreme Lord, and Narada Muni was equally in contact with the Supreme Lord. So amongst them there was was obviously the understanding. It was clear what the role of Sukadeva was to be. The others, they could immediately understand. Right? And of course, they were present there, and they were listening to the disciples speak. But that did not mean that they were not recognized by Sukadev Goswami as Guru and Param Guru. Because when Sukadev Goswami appeared in the assembly of the sages, Narada Muni and Vyasadeva were already there. And all the sages stood up to offer respect to Sukadev Goswami. But Narada and Vyasa, they remained seated. Right? Naturally. And Sukadev Goswami also offered due respect to different sages. So he offered due respect to the to his spiritual master and so forth. But then when he spoke, he sat on the elevated seat, right, before his spiritual master. Right. So that can be that we see that when one is actually speaking the Bhagavat, that at that time He's the representative of Krishna and therefore may be seated on the elevated seat at that point in time, even above his spiritual master, although naturally he always remains subordinate to his spiritual master. So the intricacies of the relationship between guru and disciple are very fine, but Sukadeva Goswami had no difficulties in figuring out these intricacies because he was dictated from within by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and equally so, his spiritual masters were dictated. Any other questions? Okay. Yeah. Okay, does one devotee roar like a lion because of association with the modes of material nature, and the other one because he's just really shy, wants to always crawl under the carpet? Excuse me, Prabhu. Could I maybe, like that? It could be, due to the influence of the modes of material nature, in a devotee in the conditioned state, who is still under the influence of anarthas, of impurities within the heart. So therefore, what appears to be humility could be actually just mundane fear. Right? Could be an inferiority complex, right? Whereas, you know, the roaring like a lion could just be an obnoxious streak, right, in a particular nature, which a person is trying to purify by engaging it in the service of Krishna, right? But it could also, at a more advanced stage, still these differences manifest on the spiritual platform as well. Even in the spiritual sky, there are left-wing gopis, right-wing gopis, and equally so in cowherd boys. So the left-wing in the spiritual sky are the rebellious ones who chastise Krishna. The example is Satyabhama or Radharani. And whereas the right-wing, the example is Rukmini, who was like, when Krishna said he left, was going to leave, she just fainted, right? Whereas he was simply trying to create a little excitement in the situation. So we see that these moods are always there. And therefore we should understand that even on the spiritual platform, both moods are there, and therefore even in pure devotees, both these moods are there. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was known as the Sima Guru, right? And well, let us think of a spiritual master who was taking a very humble position. I guess it will be difficult to even know his name, because he probably kept himself completely hidden. But it is, who told me this the other day? I think that, anyway, there were in the writings yes, I remember it now. Rupa Goswami's verses in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, I heard that many of the verses that are attributed to Rupa Goswami were actually not written by Rupa Goswami, but that they were written by other Vaishnavas who simply never put their name, and Rupa Goswami just collected also many verses. Not that he didn't compose many verses, obviously he composed many, many verses, but he also collected some verses of anonymous Vaishnavas who just simply offered their services. And then Rupa Goswami compiled it, which was he was empowered for that particular purpose. So like that, an example of great humility, how a Vaishnava may contribute without taking any credit. So like that, different personalities
inspired by Krishna in different ways. Ultimately, on the spiritual platform, it comes to inspiration. One becomes inspired by Krishna in a different way. It becomes more and more clear what Krishna wants. It's not only that the spiritual master tells everything and that you have to ask, what shall I do, what shall I not do, and what is right for me, and I'm confused, you know, I mean, it's difficult to figure it out. What is actually, what do you really want? What is really pleasing to you? All these burning questions, right? In due course of time, it actually comes from within. Krishna from within is making more and more clear what he wants from us. And spiritual master may confirm, but it's Krishna reveals his desires more and more. So like that. Both on material platform, these natures are there, as on the spiritual platform. Okay, Namalan, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.